Okay. Good morning.
Great.
Yes, so my name is Melissa Ingram. I'm a licensed mental health counselor at the Christian Counseling Center in Johnson City. That's through Calvary Community Church. I got my master's in counseling from Regent University. And I'm also part of the Love and Truth Project, which is a ministry of Union Center. And we have like three primary goals in speaking to churches. And by the way, there are handouts, so make sure you get one. I made 50 copies, so if you don't get one and they're all out, share with a neighbor. But we want to support and educate the church on how to have a redemptive approach to those who are gay-identified and those affected by the issue of homosexuality, which, by the way, is just about everybody in today's culture. We also, through the Love and Truth Project, seek to encourage friends and family members, as well as the ones struggling with unwanted same-sex attraction. And finally, we want to express a balanced message of love and truth to the broader community here in Binghamton. So I've been involved with Exodus International. How many of you have heard of Exodus International? Yeah. It's the largest Christian organization proclaiming freedom from homosexuality or information and resources on the topic. I was chairman of the board. I am an Exodus professional counselor. And so that all sounds nice, right? But how did I get connected with Exodus? Well, it was because of my personal struggle with lesbianism. In 1999, I went to a local Exodus ministry in Northern Virginia. It was Regeneration, for my own support. I was confused. I was totally broken. I had no idea what my prior lesbian relationship had been about. I had had several broken relationships with men, which I'll get into later, in terms of, well, how can that be? And so I really needed clarity. I needed help to figure out why I really needed people in such an unhealthy way. But then in that process, God eventually made it clear that he wanted me to help others coming out of sexual and relational brokenness. And really, in some way, that defines 99% of us, or 100% of us, after the fall. And this talk is really building on what Father Matt said last week. Because of our sin nature, because of the fall, we all bend or have a tendency to bend towards something or someone. It's called idolatry. So we'll be talking a little bit about that. Now, as you know, this issue of homosexuality raises concern and confusion for Christians with good reason. Homosexuality, as you know, is being promoted and accepted in our society, and both state and federal governments are legislating on the issue. You all have heard about the bill in California that was just signed by the governor, right? Basically making it illegal for therapists to work with minors whose parents bring them for concerns over their sexual orientation. So totally bypassing parents' rights and a client's right to self-determination, right? My ability, my right to choose the kind of help that I want and to make decisions that affect my life. Minors who want help are no longer able to, let's say, get therapy for what would be called sexual orientation change efforts. Now, let me just be honest. There is no way we're going to cover everything today. Okay, for example, Virginia Weatherby. How many of you know Virginia? Yeah, she's awesome. She's awesome. She's like the backbone of the Love and Truth Project. She has a 60-slide presentation just on the science. So I'm not going to give you that presentation today. And there's some good reasons. One, because we don't have time. Two, if there's one book, if you're really interested in the issue of homosexuality, I've got a bunch of books over there on the table. Feel free to look at them. I have two slides of resources at the back of your handout. There's lots of websites. I would recommend the NARTH website, the National Association for Research and Therapy of Homosexuality. They are keeping up to date on the latest science. But this book, if you wanted one book, and this is on your resource list, it's The Complete Christian Guide to Understanding Homosexuality. This goes over pro-gay theology. It goes over what the science says, developmental factors. It talks about friends and family members and how they're affected and how to respond, how the church should respond. I mean, everything we're going to talk about over these weeks is covered in this book, okay? So I'll just put that back. Somebody just put that back over there. Thank you. So why are we talking about homosexuality? Well, not only is it being legislated and promoted, honestly, the church has often failed to reach the gay community because we failed to love and to understand the gay community. We've overlooked our own sinfulness to point the finger at someone else. And even if the church is getting better, and I believe that many churches are getting better, they're moving towards understanding the biblical view of sexuality, but also saying, this is becoming a larger population, and how do we reach out to them? The perception is that if you're Christian, you hate me because I'm homosexual. So even if the church is getting better, we have a very long history to overcome. Okay? So my hope is to increase your understanding of this issue because it's polarizing. I mean, people get into arguments over this. I mean, it can get violent. Violent. So, So we're going to cover a brief overview of the science, some contributing factors, other factors, and then I'd really like to leave time for questions, okay? So let's just get started. Let's look at defining terms. What do we mean by homosexual? What do we mean by gay, lesbian? What do we mean? Is there a difference between attractions, identity, and behavior? Okay. The word homosexual is really a scientific term. That's what is used in the literature. And gay is more of a social or a political term that has been increasingly used and is used now all the time to destigmatize the word homosexual. Does that make sense? To make it increasingly popular. Now, homosexual orientation is persistent emotional affection and sexual attraction to a person of the same sex. This includes fantasies, feelings, sexual arousal, and yearning. This is not usually chosen, and we're going to talk about that, how this debate tends to fall out between born gay and homosexuality is a choice. And as we'll talk about, neither one of those is entirely true. What do we mean by same-sex attractions? That can be any level of emotional, romantic, or sexual attraction to a person of the same sex.
Could you repeat the orientation
definition again? Sure. Persistent emotional affection and sexual attraction to a person of the same sex. This would include fantasies, feelings, sexual arousal, and yearning. So it's pervasive. That's not usually chosen. It's basically a part of the person in that sense. And lots of studies. The other thing we're not going to have time to talk about today is change possible? Okay? And when we say change, what does that mean? Oh my goodness, I don't even want to get into it. Okay? Yeah. So anyway. But in looking, some of the studies that have looked at change, they're looking at orientation. Like when they follow quote-unquote ex-gays or people that maybe have once identified as gay and now do not, they're actually asking them about their dreams, about their fantasies, about their attractions to see, do these things, what culture labels orientation, does that actually change? And so there are some studies, just to give you a little tidbit, that say, yeah, maybe 35% do experience a change in their orientation, these fantasies, feelings, attractions. I would consider myself one of those, okay? And I know that my husband, who also comes out of homosexuality, you'll hear from him next week, and he was involved for a lot longer than I was, he would also say that he has experienced change in his sexual attractions. So orientation, attractions, and then there's behavior, same-sex behavior, which is simply sexual behavior with someone of the same sex. This can be circumstantial, like, for example, someone who's curious, so they get involved with someone in college or whatever. Nowadays, it's high school, middle school. It's just the thing to do. Jail populations, there's only access to one sex. The person engaging in same-sex behavior doesn't necessarily have same-sex attractions. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, identity is how one defines oneself. So that can be based on orientation, it can be based on attraction, or behavior, or a combination of all three. So the acronym nowadays is LGBTQQ. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning. And some there's just a question mark at the end. Okay? So that's a great example of identity. In this postmodern era, a growing acceptance of the idea of not being boxed in by any particular identity is what's fueling this. But being free to be and do what you want, when you want, with who you want. This is also related to the concept of gender, right? Or what I would call biological sex. Sex, I looked this up in Merriam-Webster's, is defined as either of the two major forms of individuals that occur in many species and that are distinguished respectively as female or male. So when by gender, what we probably in this audience would think is male or female, especially on the basis of reproductive organs and structures. Also, this could include the behavioral, cultural, or psychological traits typically associated with one sex. So the behavioral, cultural, or psychological traits typically associated with one sex. In our culture, there is a move towards de-emphasizing gender. I cannot emphasize that strong enough, especially among adolescents. That is the bigger problem. This isn't just about focusing on behavior. So just because I was born a woman doesn't mean that a relationship with a man is the only option or the best option. Gender doesn't matter, so therefore who I'm involved with doesn't matter. I love them as a person. And the adolescents I work with, most of them would say that's the case. Well, no, I like boys. I mean, I can think of an adolescent girl that I counseled recently, like within the last 6 months. Because I was trying to figure out how she got involved in this lesbian relationship with a friend of hers. And they're both Christians, by the way. Of course, right? And she said, no, I like boys. But it was about this other girl as a person. She liked who she was, you know, and she felt like that other person valued her. And that's what was important. And that's what that girl, my client, was looking for, was to be valued, right? It didn't matter that the other one was a girl. Meanwhile, her parents were beside themselves. Okay, questions about that? Yes?
What's the LGBT, all that? What's the queer movement?
It's another word for gay. It's just...
trying to reclaim the word?
Yes. Exactly. Trying to reclaim the word, Michelle was asking. Queer. Yeah.
Actually, it's interesting, like, the gay community has this, triangular prism in how they define who they are. They're LGBTQ. I had a friend when I was at the university back who was, you know, really involved in church and decided that she was going to completely flip over and go with the gay community. Mm-hmm. I went to a lot of these like seminars or whatever, and they seem to like define their identity like biologically, like what they were born with, you know, like what parts, and then like what their gender is, like as far as like what they want to pick, if they want to be a male or they want to be a female, and they want to pick on that spectrum, and then sexually, like who they have sexual interaction with. And so there's like all these little quirks on all these words, and like I'm just curious, like do you find homosexuality is purely being something as a sexual kind of physical action, or do you find, like you define from like your perspective, coming from the Christian perspective, do you define that from the homosexuality is only sexual action?
No, as I just explained, I don't think homosexuality is just sexual action. I think it's a combination of identity, behavior, which is what you just said, attractions, and it could be other things. I mean, the whole issue of transgenderism, I don't even have time to unpack that, okay? And that's complex. I mean, everything we're talking about is very complex, and there's no simple answer. That's the other thing I want you to take away this morning, okay? Is you can't just say homosexuality is wrong. I mean, that is true, but you need to learn a person's story and find out how they got to where they got. So it would be asking about, not specifically asking about, but how did you come to the determination that you were gay? And listen to their explanation. Does that make sense? And we are going to talk about, let me just keep going, and then I'll answer other questions. But did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So are people born gay, right? Like I said, in the recent past, the arguments about homosexuality boiled down to two extremes. People are born gay, or, usually from the conservative Christian, homosexuality is a choice. Neither one is entirely true, and I'm going to explain that. So in the 90s and the 2000s, there was a major effort to prove that people were born gay. I already said we don't have time to review all the studies, but studies looked at hormone levels in adults, prenatal hormones in the womb, like babies, you know, in the womb, being exposed to certain prenatal hormones, whether that was testosterone, estrogen, who knows what else, does that affect whether someone is born gay? Direct genetic inheritance. So Dean Hammer's gene study in 1993, okay? Or indirect genetic influence. So the balance between nature and nurture. So twin studies really took a look at that. And again, the book reviews all the different studies, but for example, Dean Hammer's 1993 gene study, the Wall Street Journal reported, "Research points to a gay gene." That was the headline in 1993. When the research didn't actually show that. Many of these studies have been flawed methodologically and small population samples and all of that thing. And I'm not saying that researchers on the other side of the issue haven't had challenges in their studies. But some of the studies, like long-term, that followed people for 5 years, they're having difficulty getting that data published to a wide audience because of bias. And so let's go to the next slide, scientific conclusion to date. Now, before you read that slide, because I'm going to read it to you, this is from the APA's brochure, okay, the slide that you have. But in 1998, so 10 years before the statement that you guys have, so this would be slide 4, okay, that was 2008. 10 years before that, the APA published that brochure and said, "There is considerable recent evidence to suggest that biology, including genetic or inborn hormonal factors, play a significant role in a person's sexuality." So in 1998, the APA was promoting that biology, including genetic or inborn hormonal factors, play a significant role in a person's sexuality. That's a great example of this widespread promulgation of a biological cause for homosexuality. 10 years later, in 2008, the APA released an updated brochure. This is titled Answers to Your Questions for a Better Understanding of Sexual Orientation and Homosexuality. The statement I just read to you was omitted and replaced with the one that you have in front of you, which says, there is no consensus among scientists about the exact reasons that an individual develops a heterosexual, bisexual, gay, or lesbian orientation. Although much research has examined the possible genetic, hormonal, developmental, social, and cultural influences on sexual orientation, no findings have emerged that permit scientists to conclude that sexual orientation is determined by any particular factor or factors. Many think that nature and nurture both play a complex role. Okay? So to date, right now, there's no conclusive scientific evidence for a single gay gene or other biological determinant for homosexuality. The only thing we are born into is sin. And Father Matt did a great job of outlining that last week. Our sinful nature plays a huge part in worshiping created things over the Creator, one expression of which is homosexuality. There is no inborn mandate to live out particular feelings or struggles. Okay, so that would include other things besides homosexuality. However, consider the following statement made by a prominent member of the APA and published by the Harvard University Press. Listen to this. It may be that for now, the safest way to advocate for lesbian, gay, bisexual rights is to keep propagating a deterministic model. Sexual minorities are born that way and can never be otherwise. If this is an easier route to acceptance, which may in fact be the case, is it really so bad that it is inaccurate? Yeah, prominent member of the APA. This was published by the Harvard University Press, I'm assuming in 2008. It may be that for now, the safest way to advocate for lesbian, gay, bisexual rights is to keep propagating a deterministic model. Sexual minorities are born that way and can never be otherwise. If this is an easier route to acceptance, which it may be the case, is it really so bad that it is inaccurate? And of course, there was no response to that, even though that was published in the Harvard University Press. You know, nothing happened. Why did he say it? What did you say?
Did Joe Biden say that?
So I guess what I want you to take away from all of that, you know what, I'm going to keep going. I promise to take questions at the end. It's the American Psychiatric, or actually, I guess that's the Psychological Association. So it's the one of the major mental health organizations. And so, again, we don't have time to talk about it. That book really goes into detail. Prior to 1973, homosexuality was listed in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual as a mental illness. And then there was a huge push, and it was removed from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association. So there's been a huge push, again, and I don't believe that homosexuality is a mental illness. Hear me on that, okay? I don't believe that it is. So, yes?
Just real quick, so I understand that, but what always kind of bugged me is, or bothered me is, why is it they went straight from saying, okay, mental illness, you know, you get rid of that. It didn't transition to nothing. You just said it just went away and like it was okay as opposed to emotional disorder, which I think is more accurate as to what is to be classified in order to try to provide help.
Right. Well, again, the push is that homosexuals don't need help. I mean, the belief is they are as normal as you are. You did not choose your heterosexuality. So how on earth can you say that I chose this? I felt this way as long as I can remember. Which is true. They're not making this up, okay? So I can't tell you how many times I hear that. That's in the majority of people who have a classic development of homosexuality, all right? Because a lot of these factors, which are very complex, are working very, very early in all of our lives. And let me just say, maybe I'll say this later again, I'm running out of time, a lot of the contributing factors to homosexuality, other people could wind up doing other things. Do you know what I mean? Like, a lot of the root issues, in some ways, are very similar to all of us. That's why a program called Living Waters really helps everybody, because it gets to what were the messages that you received in your family about what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman. Hey, is it a good thing when those two get together? I know in my mind, that wasn't the message I got growing up. I was like, no, thank you. I don't want that. Okay? So, yeah, so it was really gay activists. I mean, who is, by the way, a very narrow class of people within the homosexual community who are really bent on rights, equal rights, same-sex marriage, all of that. It doesn't necessarily, every homosexual is not a gay activist. Does that make sense? But it was really gay activism in the APA pressuring them to remove that diagnosis. Does that make sense? And that's been going on for however many years now, since 1973.
Real quick question.
Yeah.
I remember in 73 when this was promulgated by the APA, and I made every effort to find out how they came to this conclusion. And as far as I know, it was kept secret and it's unavailable. So that answers your question. How did they come to this decision? What was the transition? As far as I know, it was done in a rump session and it was secret. The minutes were never divulged.
Right.
What a science. You know? What a science.
Exactly. That's yeah, there wasn't really any science behind it. From what I remember about that, yeah, I was born in 74, so. But from people that have talked about it, you know, yeah, like, even the membership of the APA didn't have an option to vote on it. You know what I mean? Like, it was the scientific committee or whoever it was, the DSM committee, who voted on that. So then, if people aren't born gay, then is homosexuality a choice? Well, I've already just said no. Most men and women who grew up feeling attractions to the same sex prayed day and night for God to take them away. So this is another major sticking point. And you know what? You know what? I prayed for God day and night to take my same-sex attractions away. He didn't, and so he must have made me that way. That's a very clear conclusion that a lot of men and women make. Again, coming out of that what we would call the classic development of lesbianism or homosexuality. Again, nowadays, people are just sleeping around or having relationships, you know, and monogamous relationships with whoever they want. They don't necessarily have, they might not be able to say, I felt this way for as long as I can remember. But when they hear a Christian say homosexuality is a choice, they immediately tune you out because you really have no idea what you're talking about. You really don't. And then they'll come back and say, well, did you choose your homosexuality? I mean, your heterosexuality? Because it's, I mean, our sexuality is that deep in us. It's such a part of who we are. And so the choice in homosexuality comes in acting out in behavior. That's the only choice. Unless you have someone, again, who maybe doesn't have same-sex attractions or a historic same-sex attraction, but is involved with, you know, in my case, another woman. Just because. I mean, you know what I mean? But even then, it's really about finding out how the person got to where they are. Does that make sense? Did you have a question?
Well, I guess I was going to say, just from your research, do you think, which I do, that society is going in a direction that this conversation that we're having right here is considered a hate speech thing?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think there's a day coming when Father Matt will not be able to preach from the pulpit that homosexuality is a sin. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's already happening in other countries. Canada is a great example. Sweden, other places in Europe. Absolutely. Yeah. I could lose my license. Sure. My mental health license. Probably soon. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So, I mean, this really is becoming the defining issue for Christianity. Because it's so polarizing. Okay? And, yeah, so there's a complex interaction between genes and the environment. Well, so what are you guys thinking? I mean, I could go through the rest of these. I mean, I was going to talk about inborn traits like personality, temperament, athletic ability, you know, all these things, other contributing factors, so relationships with family, all of that. Would you rather I just take questions for the next 25 minutes? Because I'm more than happy to do that. I don't just want to talk if you guys would want to answer questions. Keep going. Okay. So, yeah, so what we're going to cover today, again, are these different things that can contribute to a struggle or to the development of homosexuality. And as I've already talked about, positive portrayals of homosexuality in the media and the culture increasingly encourage same-sex experimentation among adolescents. And that segment is where the growth is occurring in terms of homosexuality. So if we want to focus on really impacting the culture, it needs to be impacting youth, right? I mean, they are the future. So, because multiple factors are involved, there's no one-size-fits-all cookie-cutter approach.
Listen, would you say that again? If we want to impact the culture, what?
We really have to focus on engaging with adolescents, and really, it comes down to gender, okay? It comes down to, does it matter that you are a girl or you are a boy? That's what it's really coming down to. If that doesn't...
You mean biologically?
Biologically. And does that have any bearing on how you express that? So, does it matter? Does Genesis 1:27 matter that we were created in God's image, male and female? Does that really matter? And how do you help them to see that that matters? Because if it doesn't matter, then I can just have a relationship with the person I really like. So, and then the other thing is, for those that have felt same-sex attractions for as long as they can remember, there is a lot of shame and a lot of self-hatred. I mean, you'll hear Gary's story next week. I can't tell you how many Christians I work with, they grew up feeling like a piece of crap because the pastor would rail against homosexuality as the worst sin, an abomination, all these words we throw around. And it because it was who I was, then I am an abomination. God hates me because I have these feelings, and that's why I'm going to hell. Not that I don't have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Okay? And I mean, that's that church history that I'm saying we now have to overcome. If you run into someone who identifies as homosexual and they know that you're a Christian, most of them will assume you hate them because they are homosexual. That's just the way it is because of the association with Christian. So we've got our work cut out for us. I mean, that's for sure. But on this whole cookie-cutter approach, I have several female clients who deal with unwanted same-sex attraction. What do I mean by unwanted same-sex attraction? Well, maybe they identify as Christian. And so there's really this tension, this disagreement between their faith and their attractions. And that could be true for anybody, whatever you're attracted to, okay? But they're choosing, in many cases, like if I were to refer to them as lesbian, they would be extremely offended because they do not identify themselves that way. Does that make sense? So, they haven't taken that on as their identity, and so I need to find out what matters to them. And I have clients who ask me, am I gay? Like, because of everything I just told you, am I gay? And then I try to give them the identity, behavior, attractions, and they're like, I think you're dodging the question, you know? Like, they think I'm really not trying to give them an answer. And I'm like, well, it's not my decision to tell you whether you're gay or not. You know what I mean? Like, it's not up to me to put them in a box. Yes, sir.
The jargon, the vernacular that we use, especially in churches, is very important. And I wonder issues of identity and whether people perceive themselves that way, and you know how you work as a counselor. But I think in the church, we can acquiesce to society, and when it's in terms of society uses, then we can, even if someone chooses to label themselves in a certain way, that we can say, okay, well, fine, we'll be using that way as well. But we should talk, I believe, stop using those labels because they're really not true. I mean, just because someone identifies themselves doesn't make it true. It's like saying that, you know, if I went and stole something, that makes me a thief.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I stole something and that's a sin, I shouldn't do it, but that doesn't necessarily label me as a thief. And so, therefore, if somebody says, well, I'm gay,
right.
Okay, well, you can label yourself that way. The fact of the matter is that you're identifying yourself, but you're, you know, you, from our perspective, it's, you have this attraction. And that needs to be understood.
Yeah, I think, you know, Gary is really going to talk next week on how the church should respond. So I think he's going to address some of that. Again, I think the important point is to get their story and how they came to, determining to take an identity of gay. And then to say, like, or if they just throw out, well, I was born this way or whatever. I mean, what you don't want to do is just get into a volatile argument with them. Because, I mean, and that's true of winning someone for Christ. I mean, some people need the science. I mean, they need the logical information about this is the historical evidence for the Bible and all of that. But most people are won through a heart encounter with the Lord Jesus Christ and his love for them, whatever their brokenness. You know what I mean? So, yes?
I see that one of your slides on here is significant relationships. Can you share any thoughts that you have about that?
Yep, I'm going. Yep. So some of the things that can contribute to a struggle with same-sex attraction, just real quick, physical development, like build and appearance. So this would be true for boys, maybe being small, underdeveloped, effeminate, or androgynous. That often singles them out to be made fun of. I mean, you guys understand that, right? Certain girls appear to be more masculine. They have masculine features or build. Many of my clients were mistaken at points for boys, and this was very shameful. Because they look different, this is a point of rejection or ridicule. And the same can also be true for temperament and personality. Like, you know, those of you who have kids. Like, my two sons, totally different. Totally different. And my older son is definitely more sensitive, seems to be a little bit more creative, not athletic. Dylan, my younger one, he like leads with his head. He doesn't cry when he bumps his head. I mean, just rough and tumble. And so the big thing about personality and temperament is with the same-sex parent, is that a point of connection or disconnection? Like, some fathers really expect all of their boys to be athletic, you know, rough and tumble and all of that, and if one of the sons or more than one doesn't fit into that, there can be some conflict there. There can be feelings of rejection. I mean, things like that.
Can I ask an academic question?
Sure.
To be a true homosexual or lesbian, must you have sex with the same sex? Is that a
no question? The question was, in order to be a true homosexual or a lesbian, do you have to have sex with the same sex? No. No. I mean, I go back to behavior, attractions, and identity. I mean, no.
No, but even if you have sex. So you can be very fond of somebody of the same sex, but don't have actual intercourse or sex with them, and still be labeled a lesbian.
Well, who's doing the labeling? Who are we talking about? I mean, you know what I mean? So, I mean, and again, the starting point is how do they identify themselves? That's the starting point. Go ahead and slap whatever label on them you want, but that's not going to be helpful.
Are they slapping that label on themselves without knowing that that's not real?
I mean, that could be. Yeah, I mean, I think there's increasing pressure for adolescents to define themselves as gay or lesbian. Oh, yeah, I mean, the school clubs and all of that, GLSEN and Flag and
how much of that is going on? Do you have any idea?
A lot. Oh, yeah. I mean, adolescents are definitely being encouraged to label as gay or lesbian very, very early because there's nothing wrong with it. And so what they don't, what's not being shown, for example, is a study that, you know, from 12 to 18, 25% of teens, and that was done, that study was done a while ago. I would be interested to have that study done again. But it was like a study in Minnesota. They interviewed like 30,000 teens. And of that study, 25% were maybe questioning their sexual identity. I don't remember what the language was. Virginia, do you remember what the language was? Sexual identity? By the time they were 18, it was like 2 or 3% actually came out and identified as gay or lesbian. Yes. So some of that questioning is the normal adolescent struggle for identity. I mean, that is a developmental stage, identity versus isolation. And so in adolescence, kids are trying to figure out who they are. And there is a strong move to have them identify very early as gay or lesbian.
Is there any public testing that would help in that regard?
I would highly recommend...
Maybe you're not.
Oh, yeah. There's, I mean, again, I think PFOX, Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays and Gays, I think it's PFOX.com or PFOX.org, they're the ones really active in the schools. And so if you have a, if you're a parent of children in public school, you need to be paying very close attention to what's being taught to your children. I mean, yeah, I don't even have time to go into that. Okay. So personality, temperament, significant relationships. So, and you know, the thing is, the gay activists or whoever that is, really, I'm just kind of throwing that out there because it's easy, but who really is that? They would say that what I'm about to say, that's just my stereo, I am promoting a stereotype of homosexuals. Well, this is based on my clinical experience. You know what I mean? Like, the women that I've worked with, and I mean, I've been involved with Living Waters, which is a church-based program, since 1999. And so I've encountered a lot of men and a lot of women. And so this isn't always true, but in a lot of family backgrounds, there has been a major disconnect with the same-sex parent for the person that's dealing with homosexuality. Again, we're talking about those men and women who, for as long as they can remember, they've felt this way, okay? So it makes sense that the same-sex parent is the primary model of what it means to be a man or a woman, right? And that's how God designed it. And so I am picking up all the cues, you know, from my mother, from her relationship with my dad. And so what are the messages that I'm taking away from that? Here's two key things. Perception is everything, okay? So if you're a parent who has a child who is either struggling with this issue, they're gay identified, this is not about blaming, okay? I mean, I would say perception is even 80% of the equation. How did I perceive things growing up? You know what? I'll get to your question at the end. Thank you. I just keep seeing your hand up there. So just as an example, I mean, again, I'm not going to be able to cover all this, but in my family, okay, let's talk about my family. Just as an example. My parents' marriage was troubled from the very beginning. And they both say that. They're divorced now, both remarried. And my perception was, because my father was never home and my mother was basically left to take care of us, my perception was that my mother was weak, that she was passive, and that she was a victim of my father. And the other thing that I grew up with, being exposed to pornography, my father's pornography, my brother was sexually abusive, was that to be a woman was to be used and abused by men. No thank you. And so I decided I was never going to be like my mother. Well, I didn't realize that at the time, but that had a huge effect on my gender identity development. And that was made, I think it was like in seventh grade, which is key time for really trying to figure out what does it mean to grow up and to be a woman. So what's interesting is that it was only a few years ago I talked to my mom about the fact that I never saw her confront my dad about his behavior. And she said, oh, I did. We just did it in the bedroom behind closed doors. That's a great example of how my perception of what was going on wasn't entirely true. Does that make sense? But that was huge. So the same-sex parent, am I answering your question back there?
Yes, you are. Thanks.
Okay. So hopefully provides love, affection, nurture. Is it safe or desirable to be a man or a woman? Do I want to be like him? Can I connect? If that's not true, then the child may identify with the opposite sex parent. Like in the sense of, in the case of my dad, let's say, I detached from my mother, but I certainly did not, I guess I didn't identify with my father because he was kind of passive, but I decided that I was going to be the strong one. But some women may identify with their fathers if the father was very strong or authoritarian. Like, he obviously has the power, and that's what I need. Like, I'm not identifying with her because she's on the losing end of this equation. So it really is about what's going on between for sons and daughters with moms and dads. The other thing that's really important is, so first, what am I feeling about my own gender? And then, in terms of the other, the opposite sex parent, are they blessing me? Like, did my dad bless me as a woman, as a developing woman? Big and oh, no, okay? And in addition, the pornography and the abuse from my brother communicated that men really weren't safe. And so I had a lot of ambivalence towards men. I mean, I was involved in several relationships with men, but it was almost like the more I got involved, actually the more masculine I became. Like, I can look back at pictures, and I mean, it's very, very interesting. And so it was almost like there was an unconscious or subconscious continuing to detach from the feminine. I mean, when I started this healing process, I was completely detached from the feminine. I hated the feminine. I hated women. I mean, I hated just about everybody, actually. I talk about I was a hate crime waiting to happen. Because I hated men, I hated women, I hated myself. I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, this is serious stuff. And to unpack all that, I mean, that takes time. So that's what I'm saying. Like, it's not a simple issue. For sons, let me just talk about this. Again, you have that, you need to look at the same-sex relationship. But moms really have an ability to push the son towards the father and encourage him to connect with the father. Or if they want to hold the son close, then they're really getting in the way of the development of that masculine identity. Does that make sense? Because they're too close. They stay too close. I promise I'll answer your questions. But also, if the mom is disrespectful or demeaning or critical of the father and the son is watching that, it becomes clear that women are dangerous and to be masculine, to be a man, is bad. Okay? And so there can be either a disowning of their own masculinity, their developing masculinity. This is made 10 times worse by mothers who take their sons into their confidence and tell them all the problems with the father. I mean, you're destroying your son. You're destroying him. Absolutely destroying him. And mothers who do that to their daughters are destroying them too, but in an entirely different way. Okay? So listen, I could keep going on and on and on, but I really, we have 5 minutes. What time does the church service start? Yeah. So, and then siblings and peers, like, so the little girl or the little boy, 5 years old, 6 years old, goes into kindergarten. Are they secure? Is that foundation laid of security from their interaction with their family? If it is, they might do pretty well. If they're insecure in that identity, you can bet the other kids are going to pick up on it. You can bet. I mean, there are men that I know who were called, and this happens all the time. I mean, kids are cruel. Fag, sissy, you know, all of that. And they said, well, they must know something that I don't. And maybe that really is who I am. And they just took that label right on. Okay? So peers exert a tremendous amount of influence. Again, it's that point of identification. Okay? And then abuse and trauma. I mean, imagine like what I said about my dad and my brother times 10, okay? When you've been abused by the other sex, there's huge ramifications for that. And when if someone's been abused by the same sex, then there's an early sexualization of that same-sex love. I mean, there's a legitimate need for same-sex love, right? From our moms and from our dads. But if that's been sexualized, that can really twist somebody's perception of what love is and of what's normal. So that's that. Okay. Questions? You had your hand up.
You talk with your children and you know, one age you touch on them about your circumstances. And
good question.
Especially the younger parents that have younger children, they struggle with, you know, homosexual tendencies, whatever,
right,
however it is. Should they start talking to their children about that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely getting earlier and earlier. I mean, it used to be that parents could wait until what age to have the sex talk? 14, 15? No. We're talking 10. We're talking 8-year-olds are already having sex. I mean, don't even get me started. I'm not kidding. Oh, yeah, there are studies. I mean, we just had a presentation by this guy from Disciple Land. And, I mean, the statistics were shocking. I mean, the whole sexting and all of this stuff. So I think it's an individual decision, but if you're waiting until much after 10, you're behind the eight ball. Then they have already heard everything from their friends. Yeah?
I've got two quick questions. One is, you know, we live in a society where there are a lot of single-parent homes.
Yep. Yep.
And, you know, in a healthy way,
yes.
Can that...
Absolutely. Absolutely. The question, did everybody hear that question? We really need, especially with the epidemic of fatherlessness in our society, we desperately need Christian men to come alongside and mentor these young men and these boys. Absolutely. And the same would be true for an uncle, a grandfather, as long as there is a present, salient, that's a big word, man to model what's appropriate and to really take that boy, and the same would be true for women, but usually it's single mothers, you know, left with boys. Yeah, they really need help. Otherwise, that little boy is going to go off into something. It may not be homosexuality, but it's going to be something else, you know, so... Yep.
Whatever. Is modeling a healthy female relationship beneficial for
them? Absolutely.
Isn't anything, you know,
right.
Do with anybody else.
Yeah, that's a great question. The question is a healthy same-sex friendship helpful to the person struggling with same-sex attraction? It's absolutely crucial. Like, that is what actually will help them the most. Now, they won't have any idea how to do that. I mean, in general. I know that I was scared to death of having friendships with other women because I had gotten into this pattern of romanticizing them, of it being sexual. And so, you know, I think Ann Polk's book is great in talking about that, but in the need for boundaries, because there can be a lot of unhealth. I mean, there really can be a lot of unhealth because of the trauma and because of the lack of attachment and all of that. So... But friendships are key, same-sex friendships. Great question. Yes, ma'am.
Well, back in the 30s, I lived in a nursing dorm for 3 years, and it was all women.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure there were some homosexuals, but it was kept under cover. You didn't hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing that bothers me now is the fact that all the leadership who should be examples for our young people are...
Right.
It would be a lot better.
So what she's saying is what bothers her, and really what I was going to before when I said we need to deal with our own sin, is she's absolutely right. A lot of, and this would be Christians, you know, a lot of the major faith traditions, their leaders have been involved in huge sexual scandals. And again, that's a great example of where then others, and this is not just homosexuals, this is everybody else, can say, you are the biggest hypocrite. Like, and, you know, Andy Kaminsky talks about this. The push for same-sex marriage is based on the fact that our heterosexual marriages are broken. We need to deal with our own heterosexual brokenness. Does that make sense? So you need to model. If your marriage is broken, you need to work on that before you go around trying to tell anybody else what is or isn't right. I mean, it's so true. And so we have made a mess of heterosexual marriage. So what does it matter if two women get married? They might have a better chance. I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, we are really, we have made a mess of things. And so Gary's going to talk about this next week, but we need to take a posture of repentance. Repentance for how we've treated the gay community in the past. The AIDS crisis in the 80s, we missed a huge opportunity to reach out to the gay population. When these men and men in particular were losing their friends left and right, and they had no idea what they were dying of. Some traditions reached out. They're the ones that tend to focus more on social justice now. They accept homosexuality, whatever. But we had an opportunity there that we've missed. That's a great example, okay? So we really need to take a road of humility, repentance, stand on the truth. There's no compromise in that. But then really meet people where they're at. I'm looking at the time. I don't think I have time for any more questions. I can stay around for a little bit, but anyway, thanks. And there's books over here on the table if you guys want to look at them. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Wonderful. Thank you. I really appreciate it.